From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Keeping beautiful beaches beautiful, protecting homes and public infrastructure from an encroaching ocean, these are the challenges that have faced these communities on barrier islands since people started building on them. One important tool for managing them is beach renourishment, pumping sand onto a beach that is eroding. For years, the federal government has picked up the lion's share of the cost for many of these multi-million dollar projects. But as the specter of losing all federal funding looms, coastal communities are working hard to find new funding options. On the Washington front, U.S. Representative David Rauser of North Carolina's 7th District recently worked with seven other politicians to reanimate the Congressional Coastal Communities Caucus, which they hope will highlight the needs of coastal areas whose beaches are critical to the economic health of their states. Environmental advocates say that beach renourishment raises important questions, partly because it impacts the ecological system more profoundly than many people acknowledge or understand. And they argue turning back the clock through beach renourishment projects will become less effective over time as seas rise and storms become more frequent and intense. Today, we have two experts in studio to help us navigate the complexities of shoreline management. Leighton Bedzel was hired by New Hanover County in 2012 to fill the newly created position of Shore Protection Coordinator. Leighton Bedzel, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Also with us today, a coastal geologist from the North Carolina Coastal Federation, an environmental advocacy group with a focus on coastal issues. Tracy Scrable, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment about beach renourishment in southeastern North Carolina, send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. We'll open the phone lines up in just a few minutes. Tracy Scrable, first of all, when we're talking about beef, we just had a breakfast conversation off the air. When we're looking at beach morphology, how do barrier islands function? How does the sand typically move?
Okay, so the thing to remember is that barrier islands are what we see today is a natural process that has been going on since the last glacial period 18,000 years ago. 18,000 years ago, we were at the maximum for glacial ice. Since that time, seas have been rising. As that occurs, what happens is whatever the underlying geology is along your coast is what defines what will remain above water and what will be submerged over the thousands and thousands of years up to present. What we're looking at now, if you fast forward to now and say from about 1,000 years ago to now, is the remnants of what our Atlantic coast looked like all those years ago. In the southern part of our state, we have a different geology than the northern part of the state. Our barrier islands are the last remaining highlands, if you will, as our seas have risen since 18,000 years ago. So they are, if you will, the last what was deposited sediments from rivers that went across what was the continental shelf at that time. And what we're seeing now is just that last little bit. What allows them to continue to function is shifting sands and storms. Storms, shifting sands, and all the sands that are deposited in inlets is what keeps our barrier islands active and in place, or moving, I should say, but they keep the same shape.
And Leighton Bedzel, how do you measure the accretion and the erosion of our beaches? Some of our beaches are on a schedule. We know that. Every certain number of years, they'll be renourished. Sand will be pumped onto the beach to widen it and renourish it, essentially. But how do you quantify what's happening with the beaches?
Historically, the non-federal sponsors, the local beaches, had and do still do have responsibilities for efforts to retain the viability in between the cycled maintenance events. Carolina and Curie Beach are on 3-year cycles. Rice was on a 4-year cycle. Coming on board, we saw that there was a little bit of a discrepancy on how and when some of those non-federal responsibilities were taking place. And so we have set up a shoreline mapping program, where every spring we do transects, surveys from the top of the dunes out to about 20, 30 feet of depth in the ocean. And those transects, we measure the location of elevation plus 5, which is where you play on the beach. We also measure the location of 1.4, which is about the high tide line. And then we also measure the volumes at different elevations, 1.4 minus 4, which is your shallow wading beach, and then the outer bar at minus, I want to say that's about minus 14, and then out to minus 20, minus 30. And we then calculate the volume, and then we look at that change from year to year, and we can see where the erosion has increased or where the accretion has increased or vice versa.
And does this change? Are some areas more prone to accretion than erosion, or does that shift
Absolutely.
Over the course of the seasons?
Absolutely. And the surveys aren't just to generate the data. The surveys are to generate trends so that we can better manage what is a limited resource available to us, which is the sand. We don't want to put too much here and not enough there, and we don't want to put too much where we don't need it. And so these shoreline mapping efforts will soon, I hope, start generating trends so that we can better manage our resources.
How often does the county or does a municipality, a beach town, need to nourish itself outside of the cycles, outside of those 3 or 4 year cycles? Is that a frequent occurrence in this area?
I would say no to the frequency, to a frequent occurrence. The 3 year cycle has worked for Carolina and Curry Beach. The 4 year cycle has worked for Wrightsville. In the future, we may have to adjust those depending on available funding, available sand sources. Everything's up. Everything can be massaged, so to speak, so it does work more efficiently for the county as a whole.
And for those who aren't really familiar with the whole idea of beach renourishment as a maintenance tool, Leighton Bedzel, can you explain what that's about, what you're protecting, why we can't just let the beaches erode and accrete as they will?
Sure. I suppose 300 years ago, I would probably be on the same – I'd be on the side of let's not develop. At this point, we've got a lot at stake. We've got a lot invested. What drives me every morning are the small businesses that generate the jobs and the income and the industry that drives our coastal communities as well as our region and our state. Those entities that sell homemade chicken salad or a Carolina hot dog or a hot donut or a cheeseburger at the base of a pier, those are the local small businesses that really, really benefit from us managing these coastal infrastructure features.
Tracy Scrable, as an environmental scientist with the Coastal Federation, you have a number of issues with the idea of dredging and then pumping sand onto a beach. Let's start looking at the environmental impacts from where you sit. You've talked about the benthic community being impacted. What is the benthic community and what happens to it?
So there are a number of environmental effects that you need to talk about, some positive, some not positive. I'm going to break them down. I'm a geologist, so I can talk much more readily about what happens to the beaches themselves and why any approach that interrupts a natural process of barrier island migration can be an adverse effect. But biologically speaking, you're talking about benthic communities are the critters that live in the sand. These are soft bottom ecosystems. There's a great document that the state has, which is called the Coastal Habitat Protection Plan and Coastal Habitat Protection Program Plan. And it talks about all the different resources that we have. Soft bottoms include basically beaches all the way out to the continental shelf. And what we're talking about here are the critters like mole crabs, like worms, you know, very unsexy things, but that form the very basis of the food chain that our recreational and commercial fisheries very much rely on.
Do most shellfish fall into that category? Clams?
Yes, we do have coquina clams is a major food source for higher order fish up the food chain, and those are found in the benthic community, that is burrowed in the sand. So any activity, whether it is putting sand on a beach or taking sand out of an offshore disposal site, is going to have an impact on that benthic community. Now, having said that, we don't know everything we should know about the cumulative effects of that operation, but there's plenty of studies that show many of these species are adapted to this sort of shifting sand environment. So I can point to a number of studies that show that as long as you're designing your project to minimize the impacts on these, that these populations will recover and do migrate. And that includes both fisheries and the benthic community. There may be immediate mortality or death of these communities, but then you'll see within 1, 2, whatever it is, years, recovery. Okay, but there is an impact, and we just don't know as we increase the interval for beach nourishment, we need to be paying attention to what the long-term effect is.
Okay, so that's something that there's ongoing study, and you're
yes.
still collecting
and should be.
Data on that. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with Leighton Bedzold, New Hanover County's Shore Protection Coordinator, and Tracy Scrable, a coastal scientist with the North Carolina Coastal Federation, about beach renourishment. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call, 910-343-1138. This is Coastline.